Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us. Do you know that we podcast, or we have our podcasts available both on SoundCloud as well as iTunes, as well as at richarddugan.com. We stream live at richarddugan.com. And these programs air on this radio station at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. on Sundays and Monday mornings at 1 a.m. So if you're having a little insomnia or you just want to listen, we joke around here because so many programs are repeated that the very best program for this broadcast is the 1 a.m. That's better than the other two. I don't know why. It's a phenomenon of nature or of the universe, but we joke around about that. Well, there's going to be a little joking around, a little fun today, because we're going to be talking with and or to our animals, so to speak, or more precisely, they're going to be talking to us and sharing with us what we need to know and insights that will help us to get through our day-to-day lives. We walk beside you. Animal Messages, and it's Animal Messages for an Awakening World. And we are going to be talking with the author and creator, both of the book that has been written, as well as these very unique cards. It's a deck of 52. I'm not sure if you can play Go Fish or not, but I'm sure there are fish in here somewhere. We're going to be talking with Sandra Mendelson, and thank you so much for joining us here on the program. It's great to have you with us, and I have been looking forward to this program for quite a while.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm so happy to be here. We need programs like this.
Well, we're going to... Definitely. We try, my wife and I try, to listen to our animals. We have both chickens and dogs and cats. At one time, as our menagerie has shrunk due to various issues, we had at one time a blue tongue skank, which I describe as a snake with legs, literally has a blue tongue, a tortoise that we brought with us from Phoenix, which was rather interesting because apparently you're not supposed to move them. And so my wife took the tortoise, whose name was Colleen, stuck her in her pocket as we crossed the border. And unfortunately, she had an untimely end. The cats decided to play with her. Not good. Nonetheless, we have also had a flock of wild turkeys on the property where we live. Of course, we have blue jays and crows. There have been hawks, and we've had a bear. We've had skunks. I mean, you know, you can almost name it. And we've probably had it in the wild on the property where we live. And I've been a strong advocate, Sandra, of listening to nature, that nature is the greatest teacher. You don't need any other. And I usually use the example such as this. Show me where in the animal kingdom, and this is everything except man, what species collects for more than one season? And I haven't been able to find one. Squirrels, they certainly collect, but they don't hoard, and it's only for a season. And then they start all over again in spring, collecting all over again, and so forth and so on. And yet we, human beings, we pay hundreds, if not thousands of dollars for storage units to hold all kinds of stuff. And now that's just one example. But you also have the ability, if I'm not mistaken, to connect with animals. If someone were to come to you and say, hey, my cat, my dog, my horse, etc., is experiencing this condition, that condition, you're able to tap in and connect with that animal and sort of give that person a little insight into where that dog, cat, horse is coming from?
You know, the short answer is yes, and the long answer is that connecting with life is an innate gift we all have, but it manifests in different ways. There are at least 8 different ways of receiving from animals, whether it's in that sense of instant knowing or clairaudience, which is what I have, which they called hearing with the spirit ear, or clairvoyance, where you see images or colors, numbers, letters, even a snapshot, like a, you know, that seems to flash across your field of vision or your awareness. Some people can hold something and get an image. Other people can feel in their body what another being feels. And most of us have kind of a mixture of these things. So there's 8 different ways of receiving, and most people just have never, in our culture, developed these innate skills. We go right into the mind and send our kids off to school.
Yeah.
So, yes.
The
answer is yes.
And sometimes we get so emotionally attached that sometimes we can't hear because we are looking for we're looking for a specific outcome, and that isn't necessarily the outcome that this creature wants or is looking for. I'm a Reiki master, and when I was taught how to give treatments and so forth, I was taught that you are not using the energy the energy for your intent. You are sending the energy to allow the individual or the situation to use it in whatever way they see fit. Case in point, my father's brother was dying of cancer, and we wanted to send him an absentee healing. So they gave us a picture. We did such. About 2 weeks later, prior to his funeral, we were told about what happened where he was living in Miami, Arizona. And he basically got angry and threw his medications against the wall. He got into his wheelchair, wheeled himself across the compound where his family lived to the house where his son was living, and apparently had a wonderful opportunity for closure of that relationship as far as the material world is concerned, and then shortly thereafter passed.
Wow.
And so we felt as though we had charged him so that he would be able to finish the things that he wanted to do. He could have even used that energy to heal himself if he so desired as well.
I think no one has brought this up, and this is probably the key point and the basis for why I think the animals came through to me the way they did. I had no agenda. It wasn't about making money. It wasn't about being right. It was, you know, when they started coming through 5 years ago, it was very unglamorous. And, you know, this hay is crap.
I just turned to that chapter.
I mean, I was doing body work on a horse. I was working on his feet. It was bitter cold. We were all alone. And I hear a voice boom in my head, this hay is crap. And I kind of look up. I have no idea what is this? And I notice the horse is flinging hay away with his nose. And 5 to 10 minutes later, one of the horse moms came in and said, there's mold all over the hay. Okay. I didn't know that. It looked fine to me. You know, so it's had very humble beginnings. But, you know, this is connecting with animals is part of the big wake-up going on across the country, where we are discovering our own intuition. We are discovering, hopefully, the power of our thoughts and our intentions to create the life we want and the world we want.
Well, that's interesting because I'm going to read, if I may, this quote under this particular picture, which is pretty much what you are saying. Come and dream with us of a world we both want to see, because dreams become reality. Don't fear what is to come. See what you want to be, and we will both make it so. All the animals in the world are waiting to co-create with humans. We are tired of doing it alone and need the help of humankind. You must climb on board and believe. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's a quote from the water buffalo.
Yes.
And that
many species have come through with what shocked me the most was the intention behind their actions. You know, I gave them the floor after they came through with stuff I could not fathom. You know, I'd write it down and I go to sleep and I wake up in the morning and call my mom and go, Mom, she's like, relax, it's not you. You're funny, but you're not that funny. And you're smart, but you're not that wise. And there's just no way it could have been me. Mm-hmm. But then what I noticed was regardless of the species. I mean, from a lynx to a hare to horses and blue whales, and utilizing the power of your mind to see what you want to have happen. Animals don't focus on the negative. They are constantly focusing forward, creating with their minds. Otherwise, they probably would have given up on us humans long ago.
So you're saying that they're not, when you get these different messages along the way, in spite of everything that we as humans have done to the habitat that various animals inhabit, there isn't sadness and frustration and all of those things that a lot of us are expressing as well and feeling because we have made a mess of the planet and so forth. That's not where they're coming from.
Well, there's a lot of themes in the book, and I almost wish it wasn't a book because I have to keep going back and looking at it. First of all, they're all individual souls the way we are. So there will be animals that are willing to connect with you that hold a vibration of peace. You know, you see films on Facebook, for example, of a lion taking care of a baby deer, and it's not a female lion. It's not in, you know, nursing where you could say it's oxytocin that's causing that. And clearly, the animals say, look, it is an individual thing. You know, just the way we are all at different stages, and some of us are more loving and evolved, and others of us are still in the negative and the resentment and hatred. You know, I can't say the animals are kind of down there at the same level we are when we're at our worst. Mm-hmm. You could blame that on the monkey mind. I really blame it on domestication. We really have caused ourselves undue misery in between our left ear and our right ear. Mm. You know, that is where the hell rests. So I really believe we suffer on a level that is, you know, internally so much more intense than the animals because they let things go. They, you know, if they make a mistake, whoops, and they move forward.
Yeah.
And as a gorilla told me, they see themselves through the eyes of love, you know, so they can move forward onto the next thing. Now, it is different for animals that are really close to humans and share our lives. They suffer the damage we enforce on them. They feel our thoughts, our illness. So it's a different situation for a dog that lives in your house versus a bear in the wild. You know, what they're subject to, including toxicity and, you know, what affects them physically from the environment.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a beautiful multicolored world that they live in. They have shared stuff, talking about love and the difference between love in the animal world versus romantic love in the human world. And interestingly, so many species kept drilling down love to its very essence, which is self-love. Because for animals, there is no difference between loving self and loving someone else. It's all one experience. And we see it as separate.
You know, I've often also observed the way in which we label animal behavior. Mm. And for example, predator prey. The animals, I'm guessing, you will probably be able to enlighten me, they don't see themselves as predator or prey. If they are in that chain of events, it doesn't matter which end, that's just life. That's just the way that it is.
It's the needs of the body.
Yeah.
It's not malicious.
Of the soul. Yeah, it's not right. Malicious. Mm-hmm. There's no intent other than to continue living, so I've got to eat, and this is what supposedly I'm designed to eat, so I'm going to chase this thing, I'm going to take it down, and this is what I'm going to consume, and this creature will live on in me, and so on and so forth.
Well, here's the key. Mm-hmm. Number one, they don't go after just any animal.
Right.
The energy is dropping. They go after the animal that is a little off. They can sense it in the energy field. We can't.
Right.
I mean, I had a lion or a tiger tell me. They don't just, you know, where the energy, the life force is a little off or a lot off, number one. Number two, there are no surprises in the animal world. They have a very elaborate system of warnings and signals, so the one that's going to be caught knows it. It's not a terror. It's not a shock.
Do you think that we as human beings have done a disservice over the, I'm going to say, since medical science has come along to improve the quality of life, or allegedly to improve the quality of life, to continue to bring lives into this world that where the energy might be, as you describe it, off? And that, because this, I always raise this question when it comes to science and technology and so forth. Just because we can, does that mean we should? And I know that's a tough one. I'm not asking for a definitive answer here, but I'm just curious as to your observations.
Well, you know something? That is truly something that each person needs to sit with. Hmm. What feels right in your gut? Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Just because we can, is that the best choice? Just because we, you know, and again, it's not a, I don't want to get into an ideological war about whether you bring a child into the world when half its body is not developed.
Right.
And you could say, okay, is that the karma for that soul? You know, it's really touchy stuff. You know, in nature, if an animal gets killed, they move forward and they try to look at it. And again, it's different by species, but like the squirrels tell me, you know, we think it might have prevented a slower, more suffering death. And we let the soul move on. I mean, this just happened to me a few weeks ago where I saw one of the squirrels that I feed, and I said, oh, I'll head for home and go pull out the almonds. And as I start walking, I see the squirrel get hit by a car.
Oh.
And I start walking over to him, and he's so disoriented, and he can't walk. He's kind of this way, that way, and the blood's coming out of his nose, and I start sending him Reiki, and I said with my mind, I won't leave you. And another squirrel begins screaming at me, both, you know, the regular squirrel vocalization, and I hear in my head, leave him. You are interfering with his process.
Oh.
There were tons of squirrels around in the trees. Nobody ran over to him. You know, the soul has its own path, and animals are so incredibly aware of it and respectful of it. I mean, they tell me humans may believe that something comes after. We know. So I asked a crow, I said, what were you before? And he said, I was a cat, I was a snail, and I was a bull. I said, how about a human? He said, not yet, but stay tuned. We don't know what form will hold the lessons that our soul needs to learn. It's always a surprise. They know when it's time to die. They start to feel a tug upward. They stop eating, you know. They say, time's up here. Time is up here anyway, and, you know, there's another adventure that awaits. And I even had a horse that I actually knew from a rescue come through from the other side to share what it was like to transition and cross over, because humans have so many fears about it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they have shared really, I mean, I had no idea about a lot of this stuff and how their relationships are and how they communicate through the thought stream.
Mm.
Now, I guess the biggest one that, you know, there are a couple of themes that might be the most out there, but when the animals started sharing all the different ways that they receive information, and the squirrels did a very good job of sharing this, they imagine an internet without the need of computers. There is this web of life that connects all living things, and all the animals can see it, but humans can't. So on the one hand, think about it. If you have an intention or a thought, and it immediately travels through that web, and you see the impact on another, you might choose differently. So the animals see that. They also get information. Again, a little hard to make that cognitive leap, but here's an example. I was communicating with chimps who said they were in Tanzania, and they were very excited. They said, you know, we almost gave up on you humans, but in the last few months, the changes have been cataclysmic for the better. Mm-hmm. Wonderful rescue efforts going on, especially in Asia. I had no idea what they were talking about. 4 months later, I see a movie from Disney Asia. There's a nonprofit called Animals Asia, and all of the stuff that they're doing to conserve hundreds of thousands of acres and keep species alive, and that, you know, was put all over the screen. And I was just, I had to hear about it from the chimps in Tanzania, because they said, this we say because we know there is more going on than what we see here in the jungle.
Mm.
So, you know, if they read energy fields, which they do, if they, like, that's why your dog can get all excited 2 minutes before you even round the corner.
Yeah.
Right?
They,
you know, there's a wonderful, he now calls himself a former scientist named Rupert Sheldrake. In 1999, he wrote a book called Dogs Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home. And regardless of what kind of schedule that person kept, erratic, the same, it, you know, hidden camera showed those dogs knew, you know, half hour before they were waiting at the door because they tap into your energy field. Wouldn't it be great if we could start doing the same thing?
Well, I will tell you that the subject of transitioning is a real important one from my standpoint. I've been doing one program after another, talking with so many different people, people who experience near death, out of body, and so forth. Even did a program or two with a gentleman who is a part of an institute that talks about life between lives, that space where... that squirrel, for example, didn't just immediately jump into another body from that one. There was a space between, and and I actually went through a session. I was taken in under hypnosis through the process. It was fascinating. I was blown away. But this subject has always been important to me. And what I'd like, if we can, when we come back from break, I would like to talk a little bit more about that. But if we can, maybe from a more personal perspective. We're talking with Sandra Mendelson, and she is the author of We Walk Beside You, Animal Messages from an Awakening World. There are also a set of wonderful cards. I love the images, the picture, which is the same on the book cover as the cards. The cards are animal message cards, 52. It's a deck of 52. And there's some great messages in here as well. And we're going to continue talking with Sandra here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Please stay with us.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best. Understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. Sandra Mendelson is my guest, and we're talking about the animals that are in our lives. You know, Sandra, you were talking about different animals and so forth, and there was one experience with a bear up on the property where we live that was actually one of the most extraordinary experiences I had ever had in my life with a wild animal. I'm going to rephrase that, with what we as humans deem as wild animals. And this bear was a brown bear here in Central California who wandered onto the property where we live. And our neighbor at one point, I think this was in the summertime, actually got a picture of the bear. He had walked over to this inflated pool, which was actually designed to hold water for in case there was a fire or something. You had this big, you know, supply here. And he was actually leaning on the inflated pool drinking. Well, the experience that I had, I was down taking care of our chickens. And at that time, we had maybe 20 or 30 in our flock. And one of them had passed. So I was taking the carcass up to throw it away. And I heard this rustling in the bushes off to my left. And I went, what is that? And I stopped. I wanted to know what it was. I had no fear. I was curious. And all of a sudden, this brown bear stood up and looked at me and for maybe 5-10 seconds, and then stooped back down again and went back to eating because there were plum trees and loquat trees and so forth there. So I went to the garbage. I'm not going to bother him. He's not going to bother me. Took care of the deceased chicken, walked back to the house. And my wife says, what's going on? I said, I just saw a bear. She says, I want to see the bear. I want to see the bear. And I said, all right, hang on a second, because I still was finishing up in the chicken run. And she was already headed up the road. So I finished up, and I followed her, and we went up to the top of the road. And we listened, and I said, he's over there in those bushes. And you can hear the rustling. And he stood up again. And he looked at us. Only this time, he turned around. He sort of walked away from us and then across the road that we were standing on, probably not more than 50, 75 feet from us, then walked out onto the paved road and headed down, for folks who live in the area, headed down towards the tavern. And the sense I got was, look, I was trying to eat and you've interfered with my privacy, so I'm out of here. But there was absolutely no fear. I wasn't worried about our safety. And it's not because I knew, well, if he does come this way, I know what to do. No, It was that we were just observing. We weren't threatening him or her. I don't know if it was a male or female. To me, extraordinary to have those kinds of experience. And I lived in the city for 46 years in Phoenix. Never had anything like that ever happen.
Well, I got a good five-line quote from a bear, because I was. This is actually a chapter when I was asking animals how they have fun. And this is what the bear said. You know, we get a kick out of it when humans film us. We totally play it up when we know you're watching. We always know, even when there's a hidden camera. We feel it because we're big, but still very sensitive to energy. And yes, we adore human toys. Hot tubs, pools, hammocks, and beach balls, what a hoot.
Oh, man.
So, you know, I think the only thing is that bear may have wanted to, you know, play around with your beach chairs, whatever. We always think we've offended them. But, you know, when your intention, at which they read, is one, you know, you're in a state of wonder, and you just want to look at them, they know not to be afraid, and they also will not get violent because they read your energy and your thoughts first.
Yeah.
And so many people just want to look at them. We marvel at them. And it's an honor for them, to be honest with you. In fact, I've even had animals tell me at, you know, Lion Country Safari that they take their job as ambassadors very seriously.
Mm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you would say, okay, you know, they're still captive even though they get to roam around without cages. So they have made the best of the situation, and they educate. Now, I can't speak for all animals in zoos that are captive, and, you know, that's a whole other subject that animals spoke about. But, you know, we always seem to get their intentions. You know, we anthropomorphize. We think, okay, I would react this way, and so that's what the animal is feeling. And that's where we kind of go off on the wrong path. You know, we've put our beliefs onto them.
Yeah, yeah. I want to, if I can indulge you, I want to ask you, I have a 16-year-old white shepherd, and I don't know how much information you need in order to tap into her. She can't walk. I have to carry her everywhere she goes. And my biggest concern right now is the issue quality of life. Now, she is an old dog. I mean, by dog standards, 7 times 16, that's an old creature. But she has been a caregiver all her life. And I just don't know what it is that she wants to do. She still has a lot of life in her. She's still eating. She's still drinking. She now, we have to put diapers on her in the house because she's still doing that too. Still barking at the other dog when it gets too close to her food, that kind of thing. But I just don't know what she wants to do. And it's getting stressful, especially on the other dog, because he doesn't, well, based upon what you've said, he probably knows exactly what's going on. It doesn't make it any easier on him. Is there any insight that you can give me either from your experiences or maybe even tapping into her, if that's even possible?
Well, you know, every animal communicator is different. Because I'm so sensitive to the human vibration, I kind of need to connect with animals when there's no human present so that I'm not absorbing the human's worries, needs, desires, expectations, hopes, you know, to keep it isolated. Because, you know, you share karma with that animal. You are very entwined with your dog,
right,
emotionally. So, I mean, I'd be happy to do that for you later,
sure,
just so that I keep the transmission clean, if you will,
mm-hmm,
to find out. And again, I have people ask their pet first because it's important to have them in the process where the dog or whatever knows you're on board. They can say whatever they want, you know, tabula rasa, blank slate, that you just, you know, whatever they want to share.
Right. I think my biggest concern is, and of course you and most people can hear in my voice a little nasalness because I'm working through a little bit of a, I'm going to say it's a head cold. But I also know that it's not from something I caught from someone else. It's because I am feeling the stress of caring for her, of not knowing for sure what to do for her, and yet wanting, I mean, we even have thought about, and actually a gentleman came up to do some acupuncture on her, and my wife has been trying to do that as well, to maybe at least get her to be able to walk on her own, even if it's unstably, maybe for the last time. I don't even know if that's possible. Maybe she's just too far gone as far as the, you know, the hip dysplasia, that kind of thing that afflicts shepherds in particular.
How long has this been going on, where she couldn't walk on her own?
Months. I mean, 2-3 months now. And I used to be able to stand behind her. I'd have to bend over, put my hands, interlocking the fingers, under her abdomen, and I would assist her in walking down 2 steps and then down a ramp that I built for her into the backyard. And then off she would go, and her hind end would kind of sway back and forth, and she would be able to do her business out there, and she would come running up in her way to say hello and so forth, and we'd give her cookies and on. She was a very happy dog. As a matter of fact, at one point, we had a vet come up in the mobile van, took X-rays showing fusion in the spinal, in the vertebrae, in the lower section close to the tail. And then I told her, I says, well, yeah, but she's in the backyard sometimes, and she will roll over on her back, and she will start wriggling like a snake, and all 4 legs are flying around in the air, and she's having a grand time. To which the vet said, well, apparently she hasn't seen her X-rays, which I thought was a great line. You know, and I know she's getting frustrated because she can't move about the way she used to. And she tries. She'll get up on her front legs, and she'll pull herself around within a 4 to 6 foot area that we have set up on the floor in the living room for her. You know, just so that she can see what's going on. She can keep track of us. She never whines when she's in the backyard, because that's where the two of them are always at when we are at work. And I've made a special place for her back there now when I take her out into the backyard. But if we leave the house and they're still in the house, you can hear her. She's separation anxiety, I think, is what it is. Mm. So it's, you know, it's a lot of stress from that standpoint. But at the same time, I acknowledge, and I know that this is a tough one for a lot of folks, this is part of what it is to have these family members. They don't live as long as your babies, or hopefully they live to 18. You can send them to college. They get married, have kids of their own. Now you have grandkids, et cetera, and you pass before them. Doesn't work that way. Doesn't work that way with chickens. Doesn't work that way with cats. And my wife and I both know, because we've had to deal with 4 or 5 dogs that have passed over the 20 years we've been together, along with the blue-tongued skunk and the tortoise. This is part of the process, you know. Seems like it's the hardest.
Yeah, and where that soul is, I mean, I've had this conversation and asked my dog, and he said, yes, we know when it's time to die, but we can prolong life. I said, what would make you prolong it? He said, if we haven't finished our mission. What is your mission? The completion of love, the closing of the circle. So, honestly, the best thing to do is to have someone ask your dog, and we could do that, if she is ready to go. Because, I mean, I've seen dogs that could not stand, and when a communicator came in, she was doing all kinds of energetic work. You had no idea the dog was doing, and then when she was finally ready, she said, go get the vet. I don't want to get stuck between two worlds.
Mm. Well, my wife is rather empathic, and she tends to, she's very concerned about if we were to make the decision, about making it too soon. And I am just the opposite. I am concerned about making it too late. I don't want her to suffer. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if she is. I mean, you know, the whining is not about pain. Because as soon as everything is calm in the house, she lays down and goes to sleep, and she's fine. We were told that panting, for example, is a sign of pain. Well, she's been a high-energy, nervous dog all her life. We got her at about a year old. And she's always done that. I'm thinking, oh, my God, if panting is the sign of pain, she's been in pain as long as we've had her. Oh, what have we done? You know?
It can also be a sign of stress. It can be a sign of excitement, right? I mean,
yeah.
look in our own bodies. We
yeah.
have heart palpitations, and we can say it's anxiety, or we could say it's excitement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, that's when I really resort back to the each soul is an individual concept, because
yeah.
we don't know what another's path is, and that includes our animals. And when it's finally time, you know, yes, you could say we have a luxury because we can put an animal to sleep. If, you know, I had a dog that just could, her kidney took over her whole internal cavity and she could not hold food down anymore. Well, what am I going to let the dog starve to death?
Yeah.
You know, then there was no way they could operate on a 16-year-old. Like, I just knew I had to let her go when she wasn't just deteriorating before my eyes. Do I know for sure? Because back then I didn't connect with animals.
Right.
I can't beat myself up on it.
Yeah.
You know, because there was so much love and compassion. And regardless of when you make that decision, the most important thing is the dog knows what your intention is, and that is to honor that beautiful being the best you know how, to the best yeah. of your abilities.
That was the word that came to mind, intention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the key, and yeah. that's what they know, because they read your thoughts.
Now, let me ask you, when did all of this wonderful connection with animals begin? Because you even made the comment there that you said this was before you connected with them. How did this happen?
It didn't happen till I was 52. You know?
So, a full deck. Like, you had a full deck.
Yeah, I had to wait it out, man. You know, I'm a very left brain corporate, you know, did that for several decades and got into the healing professions doing nutrition and light therapy, you know, red and infrared light. And that brought me to where I could work on both animals and humans. And that's when I was working on that horse, basically doing acupuncture with light instead of needles.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I heard this hay is crap. And about a few weeks later, a horse down the road blew the top of my head off, you could say, by saying, when the barn closes at 4:00, we can be our true selves and drop the facade. We hear the birds speak, the plants speak, everything. And then later on that same day, I was sitting there with my hands open, like to meditate. And they just went crazy, like somebody was electrocuting me, but not painful. And he said, yep, I sent that to you. This is what we do. We heal with our bodies and talk with our minds. And there was more. But
wow.
There was so much that this horse shared with me, and I'm like, I made this up. So I said, I'm going to, you know, put my tail between my legs and humble myself and go back to the barn. And I did, and he headbutted me all the way out of his stall. And all I heard in my head was, you bought into the illusion again. We need you.
Mm.
The illusion is the illusion of separateness.
Ah.
And one thing that the animal world understands is there is no separation between us. To have a blue whale say, we wish you could have the experience of moving through something and knowing that you are one with it. Hurting it would be like wounding yourself. He was talking about the ocean.
Yeah.
So there is so much that the animals have shared, and I believe they showed up at this time with this much content because we're waking up and there are enough of us across the globe that are open enough to listen. Mm. I mean, people are writing to me from New Zealand and Australia and, you know, all over the world having these... Yeah, I know what my dog was saying, what my horse was communicating. I felt it. I saw it. You know, there is a huge wake-up going on. So, you know, they dispelled a lot of myths that we have about their behavior and why they fight, what the purpose is. And, you know, the winner is not just the stronger one. They say he's more energetically evolved, is a better leader, a better negotiator of disputes between them. There is so much meaning and purpose to why animals hang together in the wild, why they do what they do. And again, there are big differences between species. I mean, eels will fight to the death, and all I got was they're not fully here. I mean, they literally just, there has to be a winner.
Yeah.
There was no more to their consciousness that they shared with me.
So even in the animal kingdom, you have different levels of consciousness, of awareness, of evolution, so to speak. There's going to be the primitive mind, and then there's going to be the higher mind, if you will, even within the animal kingdom?
Well, again, got to be careful of how we make these statements.
Yeah,
I can only say how they showed up, because snail came through and said, you know, there is a gross misconception. I really should read this verbatim, because there is as much consciousness in an insect as there is in a whale or human. Just because we don't see a face. Yeah, here it is. A gross miscalculation on the part of humans that simple organisms and small brains make for lack of consciousness. There is no less consciousness in a flea than in a horse, a whale, or a human. You think because you cannot see a face or an emotional reaction that there is lifeless vacancy within. You could not be more mistaken. The world of the infinitely small is as rich as the one you inhabit. And the snail showed up again when I was asking, what makes you happy? And, yes, simple things for a snail. You know, lily pads and light, seaweed and sunshine. You know, they never strayed from Mother Earth. The eel, like, I do know that ants wage war. I did not speak with them. I learned this from my mentor, Penelope Smith, who is considered the grandmother of interspecies communication, alive right now. And, you know, ants wage war and take prisoners.
Hmm.
Okay, so we humans want to generalize. We want to simplify and make broad brush statements about, you know, all animals or all mammals, and it's not that simple. Yeah. But the themes that keep coming up are the intention behind what they do, using their thoughts to create reality, to perceive what they want to have happen.
You know, there are a couple things here. One is there's a principle, if you will, called ahimsa, harmlessness, if you will, in the Indian tradition. And we seem to think that for example, we sometimes have a problem with ants in our home during certain times of the year. And, you know, it's like, okay, on the one hand, they have a right to be here too. However, we're in their space, they're in our space. I mean, that's the whole juxtaposition for us as humans is, you know, look, we live here and we don't want these creatures around, so we're going to do whatever it takes. And I've taken the perspective that you can never eliminate, for example, insects, roaches, mm-hmm. ants, etc. All you can do is maintain, if you will. I have tried to find repellents, not something that will kill, but that will keep them away. So far, I haven't been overly successful.
I know.
You know? And I basically say, look, I'm sorry, but you're interfering with our food supply here. And of course, we've taken measures to secure it in different ways as well, but we don't want ants crawling all over our sink and countertops and so forth. And so we have to do what we have to do. Same thing with rodents in our chicken run. You know, now we do everything we can to preserve the food in a metal sealed container every night. And I bring it out in the morning and I hang it and the chickens go for it. And then we hang it back up at night. And even if even if rodents were to get into the run, there's nothing for them to eat. So because the chickens are even sealed up, we close them up and lock the door because we had problems years ago with predators who came in and killed the entire flock of 30 or 40 of them. It was a sad day, but, you know, that's one of those things that, each one of us has to, it's just kind of like what you were saying before about, knowing when it's time, for the animal to leave. We all have to make our own decisions in that regard. There was one other thing too, that you talked about as far as the whales swimming through the water. And I did not know this until about 9 months ago. I'm surprised I didn't know this with everything I've learned over the years. that the largest supplier of oxygen to the planet is not the rainforests in Brazil. It's the oceans. And it's the plants that grow on the surface of the oceans that generates that oxygen. I mean, the planet's two-thirds water. And so I got to thinking about that after I learned that. And I'm going, well, then what the heck are we doing to the oceans? Because what we're doing is we have one tank of oxygen left. And basically, we're removing the hose, turning the valve wide open, and releasing it. And it's going to be gone. And it's not like volcanoes and weather disturbances are going to wipe out the species. No, we're not going to be able to breathe. Not because the air's polluted, but because there isn't going to be any.
Look, you know what? This could probably be the topic of several more shows.
Oh, yeah. Because, and I feel for the animals.
Yeah, I mean, if we don't, you know what the animals have said? If you preserve our land or our ocean, then you save us, too.
Yeah, and that's what I want to do, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I sign every petition I can. You know, there are companies that are making a huge difference, cleaning up the ocean, finding ways to regenerate. You know, I even had a sacred cow in India talk about, you know, how these companies are springing up all across the world that, you know, do no harm and actually make profits because people are going to want to partner with you to do good and make money. You know, so it is happening. It's not going to be fast enough for me ever.
Yeah, no.
Again, focus on the good, focus on the good. Yeah. Don't spend 1 second focusing on everything you can't stand because it grows.
Yeah.
I mean, the animals have said you don't need to be with us in physical form to make a difference.
Yeah. I love the ideas that are coming out that are acknowledging the fact that the only way that a certain process that they might come up with is going to be viable is A, if it's sustainable, and B, if it generates, contributes to the economy, which is unfortunate that you have to incorporate that, but they are conscious enough that unless, in order to get investors to support this, they have to guarantee that there's some kind of a return. And there was a young man who developed a device to go down to the gyres and collect this stuff and then grind it up and then to use it as insulation in homes. So what he's done is he's turned it into a money-making process. It's not going to be cheap to get it started, but once it's started, hey, you know, away we go.
That's beautiful. And it's happening everywhere. I mean, there are vegan shoes. There are ways to do no harm.
Yeah.
And it always goes back to voting with your fork, voting with your dollar, you know, seeking out products that don't test on animals because they're just as good, if not better sometimes, as the one that's sitting right next to it on the shelf. It takes, you know, look for the symbol. So there are things we can do. And if we have a lot of power, we have a lot of us making the same kinds of purchase decisions.
You know,
that's, yeah.
I've been watching television programs about these folks who go out into the wilds and they build their living space and they hunt and they do these different things. And I think the one thing that impresses me the most about a lot of these folks is their respect for the animals that they kill for food. And they even showed one scene where following the takedown, this person went over to the animal, who is clearly dead, and this person spent a moment or two just being with that animal and sort of saying a prayer of some sort or, you know, again, thank you for contributing to my ability to continue to live and so on and so forth, and not just in a reckless kind of way.
Well, the animals have said to me, I just stayed at a farm the last 4 days when I was down in South Carolina for a book signing, and animals have said the same thing to me over and over again. They don't have an issue with the way things always were, which is you live a good life, feed on the grass, you know, you live until it's time to give your life to sustain a family, a village. They've never had a problem with that. It's what we have done with factory farming and animal testing labs and the torture and the Premarin collection, you know, and the things that we have done that are so unspeakable. And that's not in my book, because the goal was not to rub human noses in all of the horror that's been created.
Right.
Probably not by the people that are reading the book. But to focus instead on the breathtaking consciousness and the depth of awareness of animals. I mean, I even had a leopard say, you know, they teach their young math. Cleanliness, efficiency, simplicity, these are important to us. We will never trash a place. If the other animals are not happy, we will leave. They will leave the watering hole. I mean, there is a decorum, a consideration that we really should learn from. And many people are. You know, the animals, and remember something that's really hopeful. Because they tap into our thoughts, and into this big web where all the information seems to go, and that's what the squirrels have told me, right down to music. They haven't given up on humans because they know about the millions and millions of beautiful people that only want, that want good, that want kindness, healing, regeneration of this planet, of humans, of animals, peace, you know?
You know, I've heard all of these various arguments, especially in regards to the science that determine, you know, that basically says that there is a, and the term has been used and changed from global warming to climate change. And they talk about how all the science is flawed, blah, 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 blah. And I'm going, okay, set all that aside. Do me a favor and just set all that aside. And this goes back to nature. This goes back to learning from nature. You say it doesn't matter. Okay, it doesn't matter because there's nothing we can do about it. All right, fine. Then it won't matter if I come into your home, squat in the corner of your living room, and leave a gift, because it doesn't matter. Am I correct that, and I'm going to use appropriate language here, animals do not crap where they eat. They just, they don't do that. Why are we doing that?
Unless we keep them in a stall and they have no place else to go.
I'm talking about in nature. You're absolutely correct, but I'm talking about in nature.
If we put them in a box, but yes, you're right, in nature. So, yeah, does it matter? Heck, does it matter? I mean, I've even had a crab tell me about the birth defects that they're having from the pollution in the ocean.
Uh-huh.
And for humans, that our, all of the EMFs, I mean, I've had people ask, and I love questions because I can only come up with so many on my own, asking the animals about things like connecting to spirit, asking them about EMFs. And, you know, they come through so beautifully that we're not making the connection between EMFs and birth defects, behavioral disorders like ADD, ADHD, depression, and other kinds of physical illnesses. We are not making the connection.
Yeah, we aren't. And it's we don't have to spend days, weeks, months, or years studying and testing. It's like we know from inside.
Mm-hmm.
From that,
that's why you have to get out into nature as much as you can, because it is, as the animals say, it's a question of balance. Some of the dysfunction can be reversed by being in nature. It's a question of how much. You know, if you're constantly under fluorescent lighting, if you're sitting at a desk 12 hours a day, if you are never in touch with nature, you know, you're really setting your body up to have what's called, this author called NDD, Nature Deficit Disorder.
Oh, wow.
Which causes, it's great, right? A great term that applies to this wide spectrum of behavioral and physical disorders from being removed from the natural world. I mean, what the blue whale said to me is, in the wild, the animal's brain is constantly signaling back and forth with its environment, right? That oneness concept.
Yeah.
When you remove that animal from its natural habitat and put it in a zoo in a box, then say, oh, look, mental illness can happen to wild animals. That's because, they say, well, you have cut oneness. Oneness with our environment has been cut off. So to us, it is like being soldiers with PTSD and amputations.
Oh.
And the brain doesn't signal normally anymore. It doesn't work normally. So they are traumatized. And we say, oh, look, there's mental illness at this polar bear in the, you know, in a zoo in Central Park.
Yeah. This, and again, I, not to get too far off a field here, because obviously that's not what the intent of your book was about, but these are side issues that are important to discuss in relation here, because this would not be the glorious place to live that it is. And I don't just mean the Central Coast and where I live, but I'm talking about this planet. without these creatures, without these incredible individuals, if you will, who inhabit and have inhabited this place much longer than man. What I think really astounds me is some of the images that we see of creatures in the deepest depths of the ocean. Creatures we have never seen before, but only because of our technology advancing and improving. Now they're getting down deeper and deeper. It's like, really? There's stuff in that pressure of water? Wow. That's incredible. You know, and they're in the dark, or what we perceive as the dark.
Well, there is only one thing I want to add that about, you know, you said about the beauty of these creatures being responsible for the beauty around us. Well, guess what? The beauty inside of humans is also responsible for the beauty around us. I mean, I had to hear that from a horse, saying that, you know, everything, it's all illusion, that, you know, that everything outside of you reflects what's inside of you. So all of this beauty around us is the result of the beauty inside each person, especially if it's a group illusion. I know it's a hard cognitive leap to make.
Yeah.
But don't give up on mankind yet.
Okay.
The animals haven't. It literally is about reminding people about the power of their thoughts. And as soon as we start on these conversations and we're focusing on the negative, we got to go back to the positive, because it will grow.
Hear, hear.
The goodness will grow.
Yeah. Well, I know that, you know, it's one of the reasons my wife, and I'm lucky to be counted among those that she enjoys being around. She would much rather spend her days around animals than other people, because she knows that animals are not going to deceive her. They're not going to lie to her. They're not going to take advantage of her. All they're going to do is love her. And, I don't blame her for having that perspective and that attitude. But she's also, as I said, rather empathic, and she's picked up on the attitudes and the conditions of people around her. And it's taken her years to finally get to a place where she's able to, in essence, protect herself. She's found ways of doing that. But there are days when she'll come home and she's just wiped out and she doesn't know why. And I say, well, what's going on at work? I mean, what about the people? You got to remember, you're empathic, and you're picking up on that energy.
And you know what? A lot of us are, and it's beautiful, because I get it too. Try driving on 95, and you get off after 9 hours yesterday.
Yeah,
like your brains have been put in a martini shaker.
Oh.
And it's you know, you keep asking for, you know, you work with energy, and you still feel like you went through a food mill or something.
Right. Wow.
I mean, there is a lot out there, but that sensitivity also. It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
So, it does make it really obvious as to how much negativity there is, but it also makes you extremely sensitive to the beauty, to the animals, to the flip side of life. And it's all where you put yourself.
Mm.
You know, where are you right now? How do you feel in your body? Because your body has all these signals saying you are in an unfit situation, and the animals talk at length about that. So if there's, you know, we could sum up, you know, what are the messages of the animal kingdom? You know, they want humans to love themselves and take better care of themselves, because by extension, we can then take better care of others and our world. It starts there.
Yeah. What is the most surprising message you have ever received?
Wow. There were a few. I think that, you know, I mean, this is going back to manifesting with your mind. I mean, I had a lynx tell me the following. You must reinforce to humans that what they think they see is simply a group illusion. Imagine, as I can, that you are perching in a tree looking down on a village, your home, that disappears in a cloud of smoke and dust. What you perceive as reality is no more tangible or solid than that. You humans are deathly afraid to challenge the illusion for fear there would be nothing to replace it. Now picture a village teeming with riches, an abundance of love, harmony, happiness, brotherhood, friendship, wanting for nothing. These are what truly exist, but you don't believe it, so you don't see it.
Mm.
that one, I think, was the most challenging to our to consciousness as we know it. You know, we look outside of our eyes, we believe this is reality. That was out there for me. There were some other breathtaking ones on love and partnership and self-love from animals that range, and the gorilla, I think, blew me out of the water on romantic love and how it has addictive qualities to it and how we tie up our entire sense of self in the sharing of bodies and cause ourselves so much pain.
Mm.
You know, I mean, things like that.
you seem to have, because I'm looking both at your website as well as in the book and in the cards, you have what seems to be a very strong affinity and connection, mostly with horses. Am I mistaken in that, or is that just because they just happen to show up? And I have to tell you, I love watching them run. Oh, my God. My big black King Shepherd, Angus, who he runs, and I love watching him run in the same fashion because I love the way they move, horses move, and the flanks, and just the power and the gracefulness. It's incredible.
Well, I even have heard this from a rhino telling me how animals get their energy in different ways. You know, the grounded animals, lions, tigers, bears get their energy from a cord going from navel into the earth. And birds are mercurial and get their energy from the transmission of information. And horses are ethereal and travel at night. Horses are partnering with humans in ways that, yes, we are using them for healing, for, you know, physical disabilities, for PTSD, for all kinds of, they're using them in programs that rehabilitate prisoners as well as addicts, because a horse is so big but so sensitive, number one. They can feel a fly on their back, and they will respond to your thoughts. So unlike a therapist that might sit there and shift from, you know, cheek to cheek and analyze you, a horse will just act on whatever you're thinking. And that's how people go, oh, you know, I was feeling fear, and the horse did this. Or I was in my past and resentful about my mother, and the horse did that. So I can't really say it's a mirror. It's a sensitive response. And honestly, from their messages, you know, there's two things. Number one, people that have horses have said, I'm telling you, he's not in there right now. I don't know where he is, but he's not in his body. And then when that very first horse that spoke with me, the second one that is, said, you know, horses are constantly sending love to humans. And I'm thinking at that moment, how did they get the energy to do that? He said, we leave our bodies and connect with all that is, or the, you know, the God, the universe, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it, because our frequency gets lower being in a body. So horses, ethereal, they get their energy from whatever you believe in. I'm going to leave that open.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there are so many people in horse groups across the world on Facebook that are waking up to messages that they're getting from horses, awarenesses, spiritual awakenings that they're getting by spending time with horses. So I think they're really helping to lead our big wake up. You know, from the animal world.
They're just wonderful, wonderful creatures to be around. When I was growing up, my grandfather used to take us down to his corral. This was down in Florence, Arizona. And he also had mules. And they were a lot of fun. They were stubborn as all get out. But the horses just, oh my gosh. I enjoy watching, for example, and I have mixed feelings about it. I enjoy watching the Kentucky Derby and the Belmont Stakes and the Preakness. I don't care who wins. I just want to watch them run. But the mixed feelings are, is this what these horses really want to do? And I know that...
the answer is some.
Yeah.
But they're not given a choice. Just, you know, there are many horses that when given the choice, they become healers.
Yeah.
They will stand over you and put energy into your body, and you won't believe what's happening until you're like, what's happening here?
Yeah.
Or they partner with children. They love to teach, but Yes, there are some. There are super athletes in the animal world. I had a squirrel give me a whole 411 on that. It was hysterical. Some animals, some horses love to run, and some don't. And they, you know, force them into it and do all kinds of things and little bag of tricks to get them to run faster. And that's when we have usurped our energy, I believe.
You know, I used to produce back in Phoenix in, what was it? 99 or 2000, I worked for a satellite service that broadcast the PBR, which was the professional rodeo bull riding, I guess it was, professional bull riding. And I enjoyed doing the production at my end at the network and getting them on the air, throwing the commercials, and it was exciting and oh, great. And then it was about 5 years ago, I found out how it was that they got the bulls to do that, and I'm going, you got to be kidding me. Really? That's not right.
I know.
It's just not right. And I just don't see where we have, any, whether it's the rodeo or otherwise, or the derby or any others, and I don't feel so bad for example, for the canine, best in show kinds of things. Those are kind of fun to watch, and it's just they're out there, they're walking around and showing off, and a lot of the dogs, they look very happy and they're energetic and they're enjoying being there and getting all this attention. And but it's some of these other quote unquote sports that I don't know. A lot of folks are really resistant to change. There's no question about it. But there's going to come a day when, as much as I love baseball, I have a feeling it's going to go the way of the dinosaur, as football and some of the other, because it's just not going, and horse racing and bull riding and so forth, because there's going to come a point where, as you say, we're starting to wake up. We're starting to understand as a species, this is not the way we treat these guys and gals.
And you know what? In baseball, unless it's an injury for which they're paid highly, no one's really getting hurt.
That's true.
And most of them are living very good lives. But, yes, you know, the way the circus is, just, you know, there are wins happening all the time where the abuses, I mean, they stopped the ivory trade in China. There's still a whole bunch more things, you know, across the globe, one by one by one, where people are standing up and saying no more.
Yeah.
No more. Animals are not here for our entertainment. That's a big one.
Or collection, for that matter.
Yeah.
These people have the heads on the walls, you know, and the tusks and all of those different things. Yeah, but the beauty of it is, the beautiful thing is that we are waking up one by one, little by little. We're starting to wake up to understand this. And that's how the revolution begins, if you will. By the way, is there any talk in the animal kingdom? And I say
this. I need to ask this question if I haven't yet.
I say this flippantly, okay? And I say this somewhat rhetorically, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is there any rumor or talk of a revolution coming where they're going to say, enough is enough,
no.
We're taking over?
No.
In spite of what the movies are telling us?
Oh, my God, Stephen King.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
They're not going to rebel against humans anytime soon. But, you know, I mean, if you want to get closer to an animal like a lion that has only seen poaching and incarceration and having their paws cut off in the sanctuaries, you know, as this lion said to me, more like me need to step forward, because telepathically it's an even playing field. There will be no accidents. Humans are afraid of them, and what we are afraid of, we don't come to know. We try to control.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, you just have to focus on every little win, and how I always tell people, you know, animals want us to run our own life like we're running our own country, you know, because the changes happen from us, not from the top down.
Yeah.
They happen from the rumble underneath our feet, you know, where our voices collectively stand up and say, no more. And it's going on right now with a lot of issues. Everything's being laid bare.
Yeah.
So for those of us who don't already know, they need to look at it to heal it.
Yeah.
And the horrors are, you know, whether it's sexual molestation, you know, it's got one thing after another in our human and animal world that's being laid bare.
Yeah. I want to ask you about two other people before we wrap up. I want to ask you about your mentor, Penelope. What was her last name?
Penelope Smith.
Tell me about her.
You know, the doers, like the Jane Goodalls of the world, just kind of went about their business starting back in the 60s, you know. Penelope now is, she began, I don't really know her whole full story because we haven't worked, you know, she's my mentor in the grand sense, and she also endorsed my book, which was lovely. But she's constantly still sharing information with people about how we all have this innate ability, and it can be regained for the good of all. It has to do with your intention. You know, when people say, well, will you communicate with my horse so he runs faster? I'm like, no. So Penelope has communicated with, oh my goodness, I don't know what she hasn't communicated with. But she has also, on her site, she makes available to people a whole network of animal communicators. She's come out with a wonderful CD series. Her website is animaltalk.net. And, you know, for people that want to study animal communication, of course, there's lots of ways to go, but she has also made tools like, obviously, she's written a lot of books, and she has the CDs, and you can get the Animal Communicator Directory on there. She lives in Arizona very quietly and just loves nature, and she's one of those people that has chosen the high road. You know, the high road meaning, what are you putting out there and sharing with humanity? What's in your Facebook feed? If it's always positive and uplifting, you are raising the vibration of humanity. So she doesn't dwell in the negative. And neither do the animals. From everything they've said, they echo with their words what certain people demonstrate in their lives, like Mother Teresa. Remember that one? She would never march in an anti-war demonstration, but she would march in a peace demonstration. That's what the animals ask of us. Stand in your power, but come from a high place. Believe what you want to have happen in this world. Spend a few minutes every day envisioning what you want for yourself and the world. And that's, it takes training. You got to train you can't let your thoughts go run rampant. So people like Penelope, people like Jane Goodall, you know, that now has, as she said, she went into the jungle a scientist and came out an activist. And now is offering a master class online for how people can get active in conservation. So these kinds of people are standing in a high place, and that's what we can all do. Hmm.
And you actually mentioned the other person I was going to ask you about, Jane Goodall.
Mm-hmm.
Your impressions, your insights, your experiences thereof?
Well, you know, there is more. The chimps came through with some stuff that Jane doesn't know, but it's all important. You know, it isn't, well, I got this and she got that, and it's all necessary. She was a pioneer. She suffered the naysayers. You're a woman. She wasn't skilled. She went into the jungle. You know, she lived with the chimps. She is now 83 years old and has a life body of work of breaking down barriers by just staying true to this vision of really understanding chimps and connecting with them. And yes, I've heard some things that you know, she doesn't necessarily connect with them from a sixth sensory state. So here's the thing: if you realize that animals communicate in so many ways, and Jane has connected with the chimps, you know, with signing and you know, verbal sounds and body movements. You know, there's also the telepathic portion where they communicate. So, I'm just saying that animals are much more sophisticated than we knew, and her work is breathtakingly important to help us wake up. You know, we need signposts depending on what stage we're at. Some people are very open and they have exposed themselves to all this stuff. Some people are just waking up and going, maybe I should be nicer to my dog, you know? So we need people to speak at every level. There are books out there about animal communication, about animal behavior, and even science is waking up. You know that? They have filmed gorillas, or was it chimpanzees? And they said, this is definitely ritualistic behavior. We believe they are praying from what we are observing. So scientists are opening up too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it's It's great.
Absolutely. First of all, I want to thank you so much for taking so much time to share with us. And obviously, there's so much more to talk about here. But I encourage folks to go out and pick up a copy of We Walk Beside You, a book and card set. And we encourage you to go to the website, smendelson.com. We encourage you to investigate more. And
they're also on Amazon.
and on Amazon, absolutely.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm very grateful for what you are doing and others who are, again, starting to wake up. I was never really that much into animals. We didn't have a lot of pets when I was a kid growing up, just because my folks just didn't want. I mean, with six kids, what do you need pets for, right? but
point.
We actually did have a cat. It was a calico cat whose name was Calico. We did have a few hamsters. There was a shepherd that did show up, but eventually I think we either found a home or the home for it. So we had these experiences. I used to get chased by these big black dogs when I was delivering newspapers. Another wonderful experience that I've worked through. Now I own a big black dog, and he is just like, he's like a baby. It's unbelievable at five. So this is very exciting, and I encourage folks to check out the information that you have available again at smendelson.com. We'll be linked to your website as well at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, as well as the schedules page. And before I let you go, three final questions, if I might. By the way, should you find yourself in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Thank you. I'd love to get out there.
Well, there are flights landing in Santa Barbara Airport every day.
Thank you for that.
And the first question I have for you is, who is Sandra Mendelson?
Who am I? I am just somebody that is waking up to, I guess you could say, we all have all these doors to rooms in our house. Imagine your body is a house, and we don't open the doors to most of the rooms. So, you know, I just kind of started in a real traditional way, and I'm waking up to things that have brought the magic into life. So I guess I found my purpose late in life, which is to share the wisdom from the animal world for the benefit of humans. So we all can heal and grow.
Yeah. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
Wow. I think the animals have really honed it back into the empowerment of the individual to create the world we want. I've heard it from so many animals. I've repeated it a number of times this morning. And it does take constant work. We have not ever learned this through school, family, religion, that our thoughts are so breathtakingly powerful and that we need to rest in a solution, rest in the kindness, be love.
Mm.
And you see the difference if you pay attention. When you're walking around with a smile on your face and you turn around and everybody's looking at you and then they start smiling, you know, like it happens in an instant. We are all connected. We are all here to heal together.
Yeah.
And I think by having compassion for ourselves first, you know, we can kind of look at the nasty people and just realize they were dumbed down too. You know what I mean? They were never encouraged to be who they really are or to realize that life can be full of joy. And that's the other thing. If I share nothing else from the animals, it's we need to slow down. the simplification of things is what leads to joy, and we first have to slow down to take it in. Yeah.
You know, I think that what you just said there is so important, especially when we start to observe the other people around us, and we've made and passed judgments on them for their words and actions, and it's like, whoa, slow down. They're no different than you are. It's like you say, we've all been dumbed down to some level, one level or another. And we all have the opportunity to wake up, to raise our consciousness, and to do better. Final question. You've kind of answered it in the first answer, but I'll ask it anyway. What is your life's purpose?
Wow. You know, I really think it is to go spend more time in that place called joy. And what I've discovered that many, many people are getting is that it's through connection with others and giving that we find out so much of who we are, and the joy comes out. It isn't, the joy doesn't come from, obviously, the things or the accomplishments. It comes out when our inner light is shown or on others, on like what we see behind our eyes is more important than what is in front of them. So, I'm kind of answering this in a circular way.
That's all right.
But the joy comes from the camera that's inside our eyes. It comes from we are the party. You know, the colors are inside us. It's not waiting out there for us. It's inside us waiting to come out. And if we are in nature, if we have these little moments, like the animals say, where we give ourselves a mental break and we just feel that moment of joy, those moments start to grow. And here's the number one line from a horse named Honeybee, that it may seem counterintuitive to laugh and sing and play when you think you are surrounded by suffering and hatred, but that is how you shift the illusion.
Hmm.
Right.
Yeah. By the way, I came across a recording, and we were looking for something to soothe our dogs back in Phoenix because they had to stay in the garage because it was just, the particular storm was just horrendous. And we knew that they wouldn't do too well in there because they'd get really anxious. So I did some research on the internet. I actually found a recording of what they refer to as laughing dogs. And I played it for them, and it actually worked.
Awesome.
It was amazing. And so whenever I'm playing with Angus or even Makushla in her state, and she starts making those kinds of sounds, then I know that she's having a good time and he's having a good time and enjoying his life or her life. And, you know, it's just amazing what you can find. And so what I did was I made a CD, and we just put that sucker on repeat, and we left for the day, and they didn't tear anything up. They just stayed calm, and it was wonderful. I didn't have to give them Benadryl or some other calming agent. I just had those wonderful sounds of dogs laughing.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, they really don't like Benadryl. You know, we try to give them stuff to take them out of pain or stop itching, and they don't like when they get numb in the head. They would rather have the pain and be mentally clear.
Okay.
That's what they've, yeah. Many dogs have told me that over and over again. Please stop the meds and do this and, you know,
right.
Put me in the daylight. Please see me healing. You know, because if they hear your thoughts, oh, my God, he's going to die, she's going to die, they're so sick, oh, my God, then they feel like they're healing on their own, they're working at healing on their own, or even just to the enjoying the space before it's time to go. We really put them in hell if we are in constant worry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm telling you, the only place that the hell really is between our ears.
Yeah, well, I'm going to put that fire out.
Me too.
Sandra Mendelson, thank you so much once again. We Walk Beside You, the book and card series. smendelson.com is the website. Once again, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you very, very much for having me.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.